You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It is Tour Live. It's Neil Atkinson, joined by Neil Docking, Sean Bennett and Stievo, to work through matters pertaining to, well, Liverpool's latest pickle that they've managed to get themselves into over the course of the season after the game against Brentford, looking at ever so slightly back on that and matters arising from there as well. And then looking ahead to the game coming up against Wolverhampton Wanderers. All of that is most definitely to come, the Wolverhampton Wanderers game. And we're going to be touching upon lots and lots of bits and pieces of the manager's press conference as well through that. Everything that you could possibly ask for coming with you on Tour Live this week. Really, really looking forward to that sort of thing across the board. Also, you may well want to check out a lot of our aftermath stuff from the game against Brentford. It was obviously not all meant to be a battle of laughs, and most definitely was not all a battle of laughs. And yet, we managed to find ourselves still standing and we can move forward. So we'll go back to that. We will start off talking about that, where that ended up, that one. And we'll start off with the fact that it managed to simultaneously be a real kick in the teeth, Neil Docking, and still have elements of deep and miserable predictability about it.
I took it hard, I have to say, the defeat on Monday. It was really tough. It was predictable. I think anyone who saw the game against Leicester, especially the opening half hour, had real concerns. We spoke, didn't we, about I had real concerns going into the match about the physical challenge that lay ahead, whether our midfield would be up to it. And I was really surprised when I saw the team selection. I was surprised that Elliot was included again. Ahead of Naby Keita, who I thought was going to come in, given the way he's been used sparingly in the last couple of games beforehand. I want to say the game panned out as expected. We did start well, but it's the familiar story of us wasting chances, missing good opportunities to strike first. And of course, if you score first in a game, it changes the entire landscape. And all season long, we've been the victims of conceding first, usually by handing the opposition a goal.
The conceding first part of a chance, the bit which, you know, for me, there was never more of a, and we've had a few of them this season, but there was never more of a first goal game than this. And that's why, you know, what I found difficult was start with your best possible side. You start with your best possible side, and then if you need to weaken it as it goes, you can weaken it, but you might actually, you know, strengthen it from a tactical perspective because you're seeing the game play out before your very eyes. I understand in the past why we've decided to try to get through passages in games, but I just don't feel like we're a team with that luxury anymore. And I never felt like we were a team with that luxury in that fixture. And that's where it drives you a bit mad. You know, it's the nature of the fixture as much as anything else.
Yeah, it was an odd game because we could have started stronger, and I'm looking at the midfield wishing Keita had started, but then we started sharp. Like that first 10 minutes, I was like, we're doing what we've been asking for. We're starting sharp. We're getting on the front foot. Surely that's not going to be the game where we do concede. And then it just transpires that that we do. And then we don't create enough moments down the line. But the thing I hate the most about the performances is that it just doesn't take that many knocks on the door. It just really doesn't. Whereas going down the other end, it's like we have to create like 50, 100 chances to even, you know, have the chance of finishing one. But for the opposition, the chances are wide open. They come really early in the game. And I come away from that game thinking, I can't even blame it on one player or one person or on one moment. The whole thing just felt off from the start, really.
Off from the start, Steve, it's not a luxury Liverpool have got. And you could have said that, for instance, to show that they maybe do have that luxury with the game against Leicester. They were off from the start there. I take Neil's point before the first 10, 15 minutes, they looked right. But for me, this has become a conversation about moments. moments are what makes a team at times, and especially a team that's not playing very well, you've then got to be able to find your way through moments at this stage of proceedings.
Yeah, I mean, moments in the past for this side, you know, triggers for this Liverpool side used to be other teams attacking and having like a chance, and then that seemed to spur us into gear. And then we go down to the end, we create more chances, we score one, we usually score two as well. But at the moment, our crisis management of anything, that, you know, any pressure that comes our way just seems to be so bad that we just seem to retreat. We seem to make mistake after mistake. We make bad decisions after bad decisions. You know, we look at the second goal, the goal kick from Alisson's poor. The dummy from Elliott's even poorer. And these are just decisions and things we're doing under pressure that are just making things 10 times worse. And it was completely the opposite of that for the last couple of years. As I said, you know, any sort of pressure we were under, we kind of sucked them out. We use it as a trigger and we go and press them and then attack them and we go and use it to our advantage. But it's just not happening at the moment. There's no one in there taking the game by the scruff of the neck. We're not keeping the ball very well. Someone just throwing a tackle in, slowing the game down. Teams are... the way we're playing, we're inviting teams onto us, so we're not getting any time to even pass it around the back just to take the pace out of the game either. So we're going to have to start building confidence in that area again because you know, teams are going to see us, and as soon as they get a chance, they're going to smell blood and they're going to come for us, and it's going to happen time and time again.
It's the smelling blood, Steve. I'll come back to you. That to me is, you can only throw so much blood in the water before sharks begin to smell it. And I think we've seen that recently. We've seen that. I mean, you can go right the way back to 1990 and have that conversation. You can look at, for instance, issues that Manchester United have had since Ferguson left and have that conversation. I think you can look at Arsenal in different phases and have that conversation. I think there's a bit of blood in the water, oddly, around the imperious Manchester City at the minute. You know, this is a side who haven't won either of the last two home games. The game before that took a penalty kick against Fulham in the last minute for them to get all 3 points. You know, you've got to be conscious of what you're doing when there's blood in the water. And sometimes it can help open a game up. It can tempt a team out. But at the minute, it feels like Liverpool, every bit of encouragement Liverpool offer is encouragement for them. And then it's encouragement for the next set of opponents, and then the next set of opponents, and the next set of opponents. Everyone's getting encouraged.
And rightly so. You're not going to be any manager of any kind of pedigree if you're not looking at Liverpool at the moment and seeing what our weaknesses are. You know, the set pieces, we look... Especially against Brentford, it was the same against last season. And, you know, that's why I was so surprised we were so poor at them the other night. Because, you know, the last season, they loaded up the back post, they doubled up on Trent. We knew it was coming, yet we still had nothing about it. And we were still susceptible to, you know, obviously conceding goals from that area as well. So, you know, in the past, we've had the long ball over to Mane and Salah, who were making up the pitch wide anytime we're under pressure, which relieves us that way. But we haven't really got that at the moment. Nunes is playing quite central, I think. You know, I think at the weekend, he probably moved Nunes left. Salah right and gap in the middle. That's what I think he might do. It'll give us more balance and more of an outball just to relieve the pressure on us a little bit. But, you know, if we don't do something about it and we don't reorganise ourselves and get our shit together, then teams are going to keep doing this over and over again.
Sean, I'm glad Steve mentioned last season. It's worth saying that these are the first goals Liverpool have conceded from a corner this season. Southampton was the first goal conceded from a set piece. But the one thing we could have took from last season against Brentford and from all the Brentford stuff, but learning from last season was what that game was likely to be like. And that's, again, what this side's often been so good at, is learning. You know, there've been many poor performances, there've been many defeats since 2016, but they've learned and they've come back stronger and they've come back at another level. Brentford last season felt like that's the one you learn from. It felt like Brentford learned more than we did.
You mentioned predictability before. For me, it's that unpredictability of the reasons why we're going to be so poor in the game. So this game, we've been sound at set pieces all season, and suddenly we're a mess. And we're not just a mess when we've made that mistake once and we come back from it. We get caught out three times. We're lucky that that one of them's offside. But and then I'm looking at the Leicester game, and the problems with that game is that we were handing the problems. Right, so we were handing the gifts to them and creating the problems for ourselves. I wouldn't even say we were particularly under that much pressure against Leicester. We just took it all on ourselves, and then that game was just loads of individual errors and mistakes. So I'm just kind of going into each game weirdly buoyant and weirdly like, this team is too good, and the quality we've got in the team and the manager's too good for this to keep going on. But when it feels like a different thing every week, and it's a thing that we're not learning from, or we're learning how to be poor in a completely different area for a different reason. That's why I feel like I'm on edge and I'm on pins a bit when I'm going into each game.
The the next phase of this, Neil, the manager himself says, listen, this is different if we score first. And there were a couple of opportunities for Liverpool to have got a goal and also to create a better chance at those key moments. You know, I think the other part of this as well, though, is that the manager very much goes to some lengths before that game to back his players. He goes to some lengths to back his players. He says he doesn't like the splash of the cash talk. And he really extends himself around that. Now, Kev O'Sullivan there in the comments has said that credit's where it's due. Brentford have shown very, very good sides playing the ball. They've been good at it this season. You are able to look at their record. But it's the manager who does go to town in terms of backing his players prior to the game there. And then within that, he could have just done with them repaying them, either in the key moments of making the goal, making the game 1-0 to Liverpool in some way, shape or form, or finding a way home all the way through the 90 minutes.
Yeah, I do think that much as I'm frustrated, like everybody, about the lack of a midfield signing in the summer, and I do get a bit irritated when we're being told to stop concentrating on wanting a midfielder when we all know that everyone at the club wants one, you know, fans and seemingly those behind the scenes alike. But I do think it's worth saying that there's big players who haven't been turning up. Virgil obviously has picked up an injury, but his performance was pretty unimpressive beforehand and has been unimpressive for quite some time. I hope that perhaps it was because he had one eye on the World Cup, what could potentially have been his last World Cup, that we might see the real Van Dijk after the break. I don't think we've seen that. And I don't think we've seen Mohamed Salah step up like we need him to either. When we're talking about not scoring the first goal, not taking our chances, I saw something with Paul Tompkins, RXG, is second to only Man City in the league this season. But Nunez has missed 17 clear-cut chances and Salah's missed 15 clear-cut chances. You know, by Mo Salah's standards, he's on 7 league goals at the moment, which is really poor by his standards. He's, you know, I think he's something like 7th or 8th in the top scorers chart. And I think we need some of our big players like Mo to step up. We know that the players we're missing, the players who gave us that press, Jota, Mane, who's left the club, Firmino are injured. So we need our other big characters to step up. And if the manager's going to sort of say, no, these are my lads and I trust them, then I want to see the players step up for the manager. I think it's about time that Salah really came to the party and showed us what he's capable of, because we've just seen glimpses of it this season, like flickers of the real Mo Salah. You know, the goal against City, the hat-trick off the bench against Rangers. I don't feel like we're seeing, you know, the best player in the league from, you know, 18 months ago. We're certainly not seeing that. The player we've given this huge contract to and invested so much faith in, I think people like him need to come to the party. I don't want to feel like I'm singling out Mo as one of them, but I think there's a lot of big players in that squad who just simply must do better. I think Nunez, you know, it's first season, new league, new team. He's settling in. I have a bit more patience, but I really do want our main men to sort of come to the fore.
I think the idea, Steve, that nothing helps in football like the occasional goal. And I think that that's where they could just do with, you know, when they get the opportunity to do it to open the score. Now, I want to be really clear about this. That'd be a mad sentence to say against Leicester, where if you concede in the first 4 minutes, having left an absolute gift for Dewsbury Hall right the way through the middle of the pitch. But there have been a couple of others where it would be nice if they could just find a way through to get the first goal. But all of that said, though, what I find difficult is it was always a side that felt relatively happy and was built in a way that 0-0 at half an hour, fine. 0-0 at 45, fine. 0-0 at 60, fine. And at the minute, I don't feel that's there either. And there's a lot to be said, especially for away games. Listen, this isn't about Wolves coming up at the weekend or even going back to the game against Leicester. But for away games at difficult grounds at 5:30, immediately after Christmas, when everyone's had a drink and everyone's up for it, there's a lot to be said for the idea that it gets to the hour mark and it's pretty silent.
Mm. Absolutely, I know, going to places like that, it's important that, you know, we can sort of pad games out a little bit and see games through, but, you know, we're just not giving ourselves a hope at the moment by just giving absolute gifts. You know, just being in games and not having to claw back, like, claw back one goal leads that we're giving away all the time, or you know, putting ourselves under pressure will be a massive lift to this side, because we're not giving ourselves any chances. I think the systemically we're not as cutting edge as we were last season or the year season before. I think that's not helping. Neil mentioned Mo before. I think the system's not helping. They were playing him. He's certainly hugging the touchline a lot more. I'm not digging Elliot out, but I don't think Elliot in there gives us as much as Henderson does with bringing Trent into the game as well. And Trent's numbers have suffered accordingly as well, really. We haven't seen as much as Robbo as we like, because he's been injured. And obviously Mane's gone on that left-hand side, so we haven't got that cutting edge on that side either. You know, but giving ourselves mountains to climb every time we go into these big games. When you think you've done the hard work, I thought we got into the game very well. It's just, you know, these gifts are just killing us every time. We're giving ourselves too much to do in games, especially when we're not creating as many chances as we used to. And especially not us women scoring that many goals. And we've got a centre forward who can do everything but score at the moment in Nunes, which I'm sure he'll change soon. But we need to give ourselves better platforms to build off in these games, otherwise we're going nowhere.
The repeated line that comes through is the idea that Liverpool just haven't got enough legs in midfield. And I think that there's something in and around that. But the flip side is that last season, the midfield tended to be three of Fabinho, Henderson, Thiago and Keita. I don't think Thiago looks like that different a footballer, certainly in terms of how he gets around the pitch. He was never a footballer who got around the pitch very much. Henderson hasn't played all that much recently, and certainly not on the right-hand side of the midfield three. I don't feel as though Fabinho... I feel as though Fabinho... I thought he was actually quite good against Brentford, and I feel as though he's good against Villa. And I do feel as though, you know, the felt like there were elements of decline in the first sort of phase of the season. But whilst aspect of that felt like it was physical, it didn't feel as though it was simply about running. It felt like there was a couple of other sort of issues around sort of strength as much as anything else that he was suffering from. My point here is that the way the manager plays and the onus that's on these three midfielders, I feel as though it does feel as though that midfield is not busy enough, but it did feel busy enough effectively in March and April. And that's where I find it a little bit tricky to sort of to pick through. Is it just as simple as the idea that he's occasionally playing one maybe slightly more lightweight player? Have they missed Keita more than we maybe have acknowledged? Have they missed one or two other little bits and pieces out of this? And again, I don't want to get into the realm of digging anyone out, but I do feel as though you could end up sort of overstating a certain case if the rest of the team isn't functioning quite as you'd like.
I thought it was interesting how Klopp tried to reframe the narrative.
That's
around
what I'm trying, yeah. In the press conference today.
Yeah, and I see where Neil's coming from and it being a bit of a deflection technique, but I do think, yeah, like I'd never really thought of it in that way, and I do think he's got a point in that, you know, when we're conceding from two set pieces and a counter-attack, that's very, very difficult to prevent. You know, it's not just the midfield. It's quite clear that every single one on the pitch isn't where they want to be. I was reading Pep, this infamous book from Pep Linders, and he talks about playing the game in three strips of the grass and just having that really tight, compact three lines, I guess. And that just isn't happening, and that's got to go through the whole team. Then I loved how Klopp, he was digging out all the reporters when he thought there was a bit of a loaded question going somewhere. Mm. But then the reporter was like, right, okay, midfield isn't the problem then. Oh, must be the front three. They're not pressing enough. And he just stopped him in the tracks and said, you're just looking to blame this on a position, because that is just an easy thing for people to get their heads around. And I don't think it is quite that. And again, when I said before, I felt like I couldn't put it down to one person versus Brentford, but I was sat there thinking, okay, well, the lad who stunk the gaff out the game before against Leicester, Henderson, he's not playing. The one that we're still eulogising about as being the one good thing left in midfield, Thiago, he played. The one who's starting to get back to form, and I still don't think we'd have any other number six in Europe, Fabinho, played. And then, yeah, we had Elliot, who probably isn't, we're coming to realise, a natural midfielder in a team, especially the kind of solution in a team that isn't functioning in different departments. But it still wasn't enough, I think, to put it all down to midfield for that whole downfall. Yeah, I would have liked to see Keita start, but I don't even know if that would have completely fixed it.
It's to sort of circle back around, Neil, onto your goal scoring points. I think it's interesting to pull bits and pieces of numbers from StatsBomb, and that Liverpool are overperforming this season their expected goals. But what's interesting is they're underperforming in comparison to others, but in comparison in general, the expected goals on good chances. So on Liverpool's chances that are better than 0.2 expected goals, Liverpool are 16.75 expected goals, 12 actual, and they've got 43 of those chances in total better than 0.2 XG. What's really interesting is that Arsenal, top of the table Arsenal, they've got 38 chances to Liverpool's 43. Their expected goals is 15.3 to Liverpool's 16.75, but their number of goals is 19. And for me, this is a conversation that's as much about pressure as it is anything else. If you keep going behind in games, if you keep feeling like you're prone to going behind in games, if you feel like other parts of the team aren't quite functioning, and this is why I think that this is, if Liverpool aren't careful, although we could already be at this point, and maybe this is part of what the manager was trying to say today, and it's why I find sort of trying to reduce it to one area difficult. ultimately, if you're playing football and you're predominantly defending and you don't feel like the forwards are taking enough chances, you're more nervous. But if you're in attack and you feel as though the defence are going to let us down in a minute, you're going to feel more pressure when those chances come. And then if you're in the middle of the park and you're thinking, Jesus, these aren't scoring enough and these aren't half letting a lot in and I can't quite get my position right, then you end up in this situation where you're suddenly feeling as though, well, how do I settle in a game? And this concerns me in a really weird way. Like, I'd rather be able to say there's one thing, because you can say, well, there's one thing and this is how you fix the one thing. But just that little comparison there, and as I say, it's not about us, the overall expected goals, but the chances you'd expect good forwards to take, you know, in there as well. I think that that's where Liverpool could just do with sort of calming themselves down a little bit.
Yeah, well, I've been saying for a while that often with Darwin, when I see him in front of goal, I just think he needs to relax. Yeah. But obviously that's easier said than done. And none of this is in isolation, as you say. I mean, we could, when you're not playing well, when you're losing games, you could call out everyone, couldn't you? I mean, I don't want people thinking that I'm just lambasting the forwards and I think the midfield's fine. I've been moaning about the midfield for weeks. It's just today I've decided to have a moan about the forwards. If you get me next week, I might be back on the defender's hobby horse. There's obviously there's issues throughout the team that have a knock-on effect. And we've seen all season that perhaps Harvey Elliott doesn't give the same protection to Trent that Trent used to get from Henderson. We then don't have the overlapping run that Henderson used to give to Salah. So Salah could cut in, so Salah's wider. And, you know, you can bounce onto the other flank and talk about what Mane used to do and his link up with Robertson. I've often thought this season that I've watched us playing, I thought that the partnerships that have made this team what it was have broken down. There's not that same level of understanding between key positions because we've had a bit of an overhaul. But we're not creating necessarily enough good chances over and over to give the players the feeling that, well, if I miss this one, it's okay, another one's coming. Yeah. But it's difficult when you look back on a game on Monday, you know, you look at the Tsimikas opportunity, you just think, we've just got to score that. We've got to, in that moment, he's got to be better. And against Leicester on Friday, you know, we got ourselves back into the game by a lot of good fortune. And then we had both Nunes and Salah had great opportunities in the second half to make it 3-1, which they both wasted. And as it was, it turned out okay, but we could have had a real nervy end to that game and dropped points again. I really feel like we've got to get back among the goals. And once we do that, perhaps it will relieve some of the pressure on the defence. Perhaps Jürgen's right that we've got to look beyond just the defensive capabilities of the midfield and what the defenders are doing. And I don't know if Jürgen wants us to focus on the forwards now, if that's what he's saying, or if he's saying, look at my team in the whole, I suspect is what he's actually saying, is look at all the pieces. And obviously there's key men missing.
Okay, thank you very much indeed for part one there, Steve, Neil and Sean. Some quite thorough stuff. The numbers are quite interesting. Liverpool have created the second highest number of chances, better than 0.2 expected goals, only three behind Manchester City. But from those, they found themselves taking 12 along with Spurs and Newcastle, equal on that. Manchester United, 34 of them have taken 13. And you can go on and on through all of that. A few little bits and pieces. Chelsea's numbers are rubbish because Chelsea are rubbish. Don't worry about that one. Coming up, we have got John Gibbons talking to Kath from the Penny Lane Wombles. If you're listening to this as a podcast, if not, if you're just going to roll through with us here on Tour Live, well, find that we've done so now.
And it is John Gibbons for the Anfield Wrap. I'm delighted to be joined over Zoom by Kath from the fantastic organisation Penny Lane Wombles. And Kath, thanks so much for coming on. Welcome to the Anfield Wrap.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure to be here. Well,
so tell us a little bit more about Penny Lane Wombles, if you don't mind.
It's not very rock and roll, but Penny Lane Wombles is a litter picking group I accidentally set up in April last year. Started off just litter picking by myself around Penny Lane because I was just getting fed up with all the mess everywhere. And then more and more people would stop and chat to you, which is cool, ask what you're doing. And I bumped into another woman, Kate, who doesn't live far from me. And then we started going out list picking together. And what you find is people like beat the horn when they go past, they'll stop and chat to you. So more and more people were getting interested. And then I was posting on a Facebook group just to say, listen, we've tidied up this road. And you post a picture of a road looking horrific with litter everywhere. And then in the space of 10 minutes, Kate and I can make it look nice. People seem to really buy into it and want to do it. And started contacting me. And then the group was accidentally born. Not a very imaginative name, I'll give you that. I wish I could have called it something a bit better, but everybody knows where we are and what we're doing. So, yeah, that's it's that's kind of how it started. So we've got about 70 active members.
Wow.
All different ages, different backgrounds. Some people are retired, some people work full time. Kids are obviously at school, some of them young as five. All different types of people just got a bit fed up living with mess everywhere. So we thought we could do something about it. So,
yeah, and it's not just you guys, you know, doing it in terms of Penny Lane Wombles. I know it's spread to other areas as well, and people have been inspired what you've done and thought, well, hang on, I'd like to do a bit more for my community as well.
Yeah, it's worked out pretty cool. So there's a guy, Peter, who joined our group, who was picking down Agbeth Road anyway, saw what we were doing, and he set up Crescent and Wombles. And then there's a lady, Janet, who's with a local council, set up the Speak Wombles, and we're just spreading over to Agbeth Vale. So where, I don't know if you know Alan in the bakery shop, that Rose shop's back in Vale. Yeah, that's horrendous. And everyone blames Alan's shop for the mess, but he actually doesn't sell most of the products that are on the floor. People park up and have a Mackey's or a Costa or whatever and dump everything on the deck, or it gets blown down the road, basically. So, yeah, we're spreading there. And then my friend Vicky's got a Litter Clear volunteer, a group where they will take back patches of grass and waste ground that used to be nice parks or, you know, full of flowers, get it back to a decent shape, and then the community will take over it. It's become so messy that it's overwhelming for a couple of people to do it themselves. So Vicky will sort it out, and then the community, 9 times out of 10, will, you know, look after it once it's in a decent shape. So quite a lot of people doing really good things. It's quite heartening, really.
No, it is, absolutely, because the easiest thing to do is to just moan about it, isn't it, and to complain and to write to your council and things like that. But you guys have decided, no, actually, we want to do something about it. And it does have a knock-on effect, doesn't it, both in terms of other people joining in, but also I think once the area is looking much nicer, I think all of us think, well, we want to keep it like this.
Yeah, there's a thing they say, it came from America, actually. It's like this phrase, litter attracts litter. So if something's messy, people will just add to it, or someone's seen some dumped litter, it will fly tip and it will get added to. If you can shift it quickly, you know, people won't add to it. But also, I know the council should be keeping on top of things, but they haven't got any money, they haven't got enough staff. But if you've seen a bag of something exploded on the side of the pavement, are you really going to log it online or ring the council and wait 3 or 5 days for them to come out when it's blown all down the street? In the space of a couple of minutes, you could actually sort it yourself and just put it in the bin. Mm. So it's just trying to get people to take a bit of pride in where they live, and realise that the council can't actually do everything and be everywhere. And if you can sort it yourself, then why not do it? And it gives you, it's quite satisfying knowing that you've tidied it up as well, in a weird way. It doesn't take long at all.
And good exercise, good to be outside, out and about, breathing in.
Well, I started it because I did my Achilles in running, because I've got this weird thing where I've got a really high pain threshold. So I did my Achilles in and just carried on running, and now I can hardly walk. So I did start walking, but because you're slower, you see more stuff on the ground, and it was doing my head in. So just pick it up. I started just doing like around where I live. And if I've got stuff in the car, and I keep things available. So if I drive past something and someone's throwing Mackies all out the window, I just whiz it in the bag and put it in the bin. But it gets addictive, very addictive.
And people might be thinking, well, what do you do with all this litter? But I mean, I know, because I follow you guys on Twitter, with the large bags, you'll leave them by a bin and let the council know that it's there to collect.
Yeah, so if you see a bag of clear litter or rubbish on top of the bin or next to the bin, that's probably us. We put it on top of a bin so that the foxes don't rip it open if it's on the floor. If it's in the park, though, it's difficult because the seagulls will attack it and rip it open. So if it's under a canopy of trees, they won't attack it. So it's a judgment call, really. But it's nice driving around, seeing bags of litter and going, oh, we've done that. But the council will recycle that. They recycle most of the stuff out of the bins. So they are pretty good. They just don't get any credit for it. But we pick up the nitrous oxide canisters that the young ones are using at the moment. We pick up so much of that, you wouldn't believe. Mm. Wouldn't believe. We can recycle it all. So Vicky's group will collect it, degas it, which is quite tricky, and all the metals in it go to the recycling, and she gets a rebate for it, which buys her more kit, gardening stuff, to put back into the community, which makes it look better. So it's not great because the kids are really damaging the lungs and the nervous system, but rather than just chucking it, we can actually make some good use out of it. We find all sorts of stuff. We find pairs of knickers, boxer shorts, constant boxer shorts. There must be someone going around really cold. And they've been socks, we found bras, we've every item of clothing we've actually found it. But we find weird things. Man's sex aid, I'll leave that to your imagination.
Okay.
Honestly, everything you can think of, we found it on the floor. So yeah. Weird.
But it must make that every day a little bit different. Anyway, you never quite know what you're going to find.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've seen it yourself. We like, if we come across something weird, we'll take a picture of it and have a laugh about it. Because what I say to the group is, no one's got a gun to your head. You don't feel like you have to go out and litter pick. It's meant to be a bit of fun and get yourself some fresh air. And you do feel good when you've done it. And you get chatting to people as well. I've met so many people. People go, oh, you're Womble. I'm like, oh, yeah, I am. I'm Chief Womble, like, ooh. But yeah, so we take pictures of silly things that we've found or a transformation of it before we've lit a picture street and then after for a bit of inspiration. And it keeps everyone going and we have a bit of a laugh about it. And we'll do, some of us will do a little litter pick, three or four of us, and then we'll go to the pub for a beer or go for a coffee. So it's not the most glamorous thing, but at the same time, we actually all really enjoy it. And we've become quite a good mates through it as well. It's a really nice social thing too. So I speak for the group, but I feel better connected with the community because I'm not from here. I'm from Blackpool. Mm. And I'd always planned to move back to Blackpool in a few years, but I actually feel like more like I belong around here because I know more about it. I walk around and people recognise you because of what you're doing. And they stop and say thanks. Like, not all the time. A lot of people will walk past you and won't give you the time of day and think you're weird. But the decent people will say, oh, thanks, or nice one. Even cars of Scallies will stop. Oh, nice one, miss. Like, they'll stop and jump out of the car and help you with something. Or there's some drug users around the side of Sefton Park will stop and help me and grab a litter picker and litter pick with me. So because they have got, they're still people treat them appallingly, but they're still people. They have still got, you know, morals and all the rest of it. They don't want to walk around and sit and litter either. So they'll help. It is pretty cool. It's nice how it's taken off.
No, it's incredible what you've done. So, you know, anyone listening to this who might live in Liverpool or anywhere really, and where there might be a bit of a litter problem, I guess the encouragement is get yourself a litter picker, not too expensive, get yourself out there and you might enjoy it more than you think.
Yeah, the litter pickers, they sell them in Chandler's at the moment for under a fiver. You can get them online. Clear plastic bags, you can actually get them off your local council or ward officer or Liverpool Street Scene team will actually give you them for nothing. Litter pickers are also really handy for when you can't be bothered getting up out of your chair and picking things up for yourself in the house. The sold as like a disability aid as well. So they do have more than one use, so you will get some good use out of it. But yeah, if people want to get involved, you don't have to do, like I will go out and do a 2-3 hour litter pick because I like the fresh air and I like the park. But if you just did 10 minutes of your road, you'll be surprised at how much litter you actually get and how good you feel about doing it. So we're not saying go out and spend hours and hours and hours. Just litter pick on the way to the post office, on the way to the pub. We've got folding litter pickers you can put in your bag for when you go for a beer. And then if we see something, we just pick it up, put it in the bin, and then that's it. So we're not walking around waving our litter pickers like burning our bras or anything. We do have discreet ones for your bag.
So if people want to find out more about you guys, want to say hello or maybe ask some questions or just follow you guys on social media, how do they do that?
So you can find us on Facebook, Penny Lane Wombles. It's a closed group. So I know people want to support us, but if you haven't shown any effort of litter picking in 3 months in the Facebook group, we boot you out like on X Factor. Because we don't want people who are passive, we want people who do stuff. On Twitter and Instagram, we're at Penny Lane Wombles, but it's spelt Lane as in LN, because some person has stolen Penny Lane Wombles bizarrely years ago. So yeah, follow us on social media. It's nice to have encouragement, but also you get free things from the shops when you are litter picking. We've had free beer, free cake, free coffee at the Watering Can and the Wheelbarrow at Pips on Walton Road, I think it is.
Yeah.
Being there, give us free bits and pieces because they like what we do and we make it look nice. Dre's, Desserts by Dre, gives us cake, which for me isn't a good thing. But there are people sort of walking past waving litter pickers through the window trying to get more stuff. But so because people like what we do, but we do support all the independents. We don't just rinse them for all the free things we can get. But we do like to make it look nice and they appreciate it. So yeah, there's an incentive there, free coffees, if you litter pick.
There we are. And as someone who's had Dre's cakes, I'm very, very tempted to get up there myself. Kat, lovely to meet you. Thanks so much. Well, thank you for everything you do for our community. Really appreciate it. And here's hoping this time next year it's bigger and worldwide. Who knows?
Oh, brilliant. Thanks a lot for your time. Appreciate it.
Smooth work indeed. Back with Sean, with Steve, and with Neil. Andy Heaton producing this one. Download the app from the Anfield Wrap for everything that you need to do with Liverpool. We'll crack on to the meaning of the FA Cup this season. Neil Docking, it feels like a perfect... Last season, sorry, felt like a bit of a perfect storm in that we had surety around top four, whilst the league sort of felt a bit unlikely at this stage of the season. There were also obvious selections for players like Origi, Minamino, Chamberlain, Shimikas until round five or round six. This one, in all directions, I'm not quite sure. There's part of me that really wants him to start with what I think will be his front three for the game against Brighton, for the game against Wolves. And that is obviously in part because I want to watch them play. It's in part because I want Liverpool to win the football match against against Wolves. But it's also because I think they could do with a game or playing together. How do you feel Liverpool move into this FA Cup phase of this season?
Yeah, I'd like to see us go strong tomorrow. I don't see any reason not to. They've got a week off before we go to Brighton. There aren't many games left in Chelsea full stop, really, are there? Obviously, we're out of the league in January full stop. We're out of the League Cup. We obviously don't want an FA Cup replay. I do think this is an opportunity for us to play as close to a first 11 as possible. Wolves at home, you know, on a Saturday night is a fairly generous fixture. I think in the past we've been unfortunate under Jurgen that we've not had better FA Cup runs because we've had some really tricky ties. I think of Wolves away 1 year, you know, getting drawn at Stamford Bridge, getting drawn at Old Trafford. I think we need to be really focused on this one because it's really the most likely chance of silverware this signing with Real Madrid on the horizon and some really stern tests if we were to go all the way in Europe. So I want to see, as you say, and I don't know if Bobby Firmino's got a prospect of being involved, but if not, then I'd like to see a Nunes, Gakpo and Salah front three.
Steve, it's one where, you know, and amongst all this, the manager mentions that, you know, he expects Gakpo to be there. I get the impression from the way in which he was talking, you know, he mentioned through his press conference that he'd like to see the removal of the replays. And when people cite the idea of the lower league clubs, he says, well, let's find other ways to get the money, which I think is a pretty direct and honest response that I don't think you can argue with, really. Also, I think that increasingly lower league clubs themselves would like to play fewer games. They're all playing 46 league games. Plus, if you're in League One or League Two, the EFL trophy, plus first and second round of the FA Cup, plus any League Cup games that they get. Do you know what I mean? I think they themselves, on the sporting side, and they haven't got all the facilities that everyone else has got. You know, I think that there is a thing there where everyone talks for the AFL clubs and not enough people actually ask them. But where I'm ending up here is from a Liverpool point of view, a Jurgen Klopp point of view, if there's one thing I think he's going to want, it's not a replay.
Yeah, definitely. God, with the walking wounded that we are so far, I mean, if you look across the board in the Premier League, the injury league table for everyone, there's muscle injuries everywhere. Chelsea last night, they're down to the bare bones as well. So I think it's important that we get this one done tomorrow if we can, either way. Obviously, I hope it's a win and we can go forward in the competition and into the next round. But the last thing we need is we're going back to Wolves and trying to jam another fixture in what's going to be a really hectic schedule coming up. Obviously, because of the World Cup, we've got to squeeze every single game where we can now. And I don't think there's many free or midweek games or spaces we can play a replay. So, certainly makes sense. I do agree with what you're saying. The lower league clubs shouldn't suffer financially if there is replay. So there should be some compensation for that. But I think it's a sensible idea, especially with on the horizon, what seems to be more and more games being touted around with Club World Cups and you know, Champions League revamps. You know, the amount of games that the clubs are going to be playing now, no disrespect to any of the lower league clubs, but the last thing you need to be doing is going to late in for a replay on a Thursday night or a Wednesday night or something. So certainly something needs to be done about that. I think he's spot on to highlight it. But Liverpool needs to get this one boxed off tomorrow as quickly as possible.
The past experience, as has been mentioned in the comments, Sean, is that he will make the changes. That even if I think, well, you know, they're not played again for a week and there's this and there's this and there's this and there's this reason, he's always pretty consistently shown that he'll just make the changes. And, you know, I think that there's still every chance that he does that. I don't think that's necessarily the end of the world. There's players, for instance, there's a number of players who didn't play against Brentford who I think could really do with a game in there as well. You know, what are you expecting him to do?
I think he mentioned in the press conference he's not going to rotate for the sake of it. It's like the same plan as always, which I guess he has to say. But I think there'll be rotation, but not in a terms. I think what he meant is not in terms of just bringing youth in for the sake of minutes. It will be, I do think we'll see a bit of rotation, but it's genuinely for strength, not necessarily for resting of legs. And I think if you're going into this, you know, every game now is a chance to fix all of these things that are broken. And I don't feel like we're not playing well, not because of tired legs, but the system, the identity, just the way we play and approach games feels broken at the minute. So why would you rotate so heavily when you've got these things you need to fix? And if it was me, I'd rather have the best possible players on the pitch to fix it, with the view that the next big game in the league where we definitely can't lose any points, the kind of the fit and firing with it. And then you've got the context of, you know, we have got a week in between games for the foreseeable now. And I also think the last thing we need is an FA Cup exit. And that's not because it's not the top of my list by any means. I think it's just purely tunnel vision on top four now. But I just think it won't help with the narrative around Liverpool at the minute. And as Neil touched on, the pressure it then creates for the forwards to finish answers when we're just behind the cosh a bit. So I think we just need the win for many, many reasons. It would be nice to progress in a cup competition, but I think it goes psychologically a lot deeper than that.
Neil, just to sort of begin to finish up, for me, Wolves are fascinating around this as well, because what they may or may not do, we've had two more days rest than them, although our games over Christmas came in a more compressed period. They play next week in the EFL Cup. It's interesting, Lopetegui's taking the opportunity to talk about all of that. I'll keep saying it, for me, the bigger game for Wolves is the one away at Nottingham Forest in the EFL Cup. I think it really, really is. And if I was Lopetegui, he's got a massive game next weekend as well when Wolves come up against West Ham United at the bottom of that table. If I'm looking at Lopetegui, my priority is the league game, but then it's the EFL Cup game. Oddly, a trip to Anfield is not a priority at the moment.
Well, I'm hoping he shares your thinking. I saw a little bit of their game with Villa in the week. I just saw Podence scored an absolutely brilliant goal. Mm. He's got some real talent, that player. I'm not sure if it's been unlocked consistently yet. It was his fourth goal of the season, but his feet were so quick. His footwork was so good.
They've got a lot of good players, Neil.
Yeah, they do. They do. And I think they've underwhelmed for a little while, haven't they, Wolves? I think that at one stage they were looking like they could have emerged as, I don't know, the sixth or seventh or eighth perhaps best team in the country. They've obviously fallen off. They've been through a lot of changes. But as you say, it seems that they still are very much in a potential relegation battle. They've obviously made their way to the semi-finals of the League Cup. So I think they've got to focus on that. I hope that this is a game where we can extinguish not their hope, but their reason for thinking they can get something from this game. If you see what I mean, even if they do come up with a relatively strong team, if we score first, then it could just be, you know, on 60 minutes they just say, well, we've got bigger fish to fry and knock off. That's what we need to see.
We need to force the issue, Steve. I think this is another game where Liverpool have got to not give them any encouragement, send them home. And I think, as Neil Dockin says, I think they'll all be packing up by the time we get to the last half an hour, if Liverpool can get themselves far enough ahead. It's the nature of football at this time of year. But what we have been doing is offering teams too much encouragement.
Yeah, you know, as we mentioned before, these gifts need to stop. Just to stop inviting people onto us and stop seeing them weak. Stop seeing that we can be got at, because you know, if we kind of just keep the game quiet for the first 20, 25 minutes, that'll do me fine. And then we can go into the game, hopefully create some chances and score some goals. I do think he'll go relatively strong. I think there'll be a couple of changes. I won't surprise me if we saw Bastic come in to midfield, I think. I think Ben Doak might get some minutes. I don't think he'll start, but I think he'll definitely get some minutes at some point. But the rest, I think he'll go pretty strong, really. So hopefully we can get out there, get in their faces. I'd like to see us be a bit more aggressive in this one. The midfield against Brentford was just so timid and so weak for me. I'd just like to see us be a bit more aggressive, get in their faces a little bit and put some hard yards in it and really try and get this one ground out and put to bed early.
Is there anyone you want to see a bit left field, Sean, feature? Any Liverpool player you'd like to see him have a little bit of a run out?
What, in the whole team, or did you say left?
Yeah, in the whole team. No, any left field, not left midfield, left field.
I'd really like to see Chamberlain retain his place. I know all the chat's been about Gakpo maybe starting. I can't see that happening. I think it's a bit of a 60-minute job, but I do think we'll get to see him. Chamberlain really, really impressed me against Brentford. He was the star of the front three for me. He actually took the limelight from Nunes, which is some achievement in itself. But he kept that Brentford back line so busy, dragged the defence everywhere. He was dribbling, he was dropping deep, skillful in the box. That step over heel pass that he did to Tsimikas. I don't know what you call it, but look good. Shame that Tsimikas didn't finish it. But it was a real, quite a Bobby performance, Bobby-esque performance, actually. But I really enjoyed playing him. He obviously got the goal, but I think he deserves to keep his space.
Okay.
I'd like to see him down the centre, Ox. I think there's something in that. I'd like to see him down the middle.
I'm not averse to seeing him in midfield, if we can.
Me too.
I wouldn't mind seeing him on the right-hand side of the midfield, certainly if we're still not sure about Henderson. I wouldn't mind seeing him there. Thank you very much indeed to Steve, to Sean, and to Neil Dock. And Andy Heaton has produced this, and he's just told me that we've got ourselves an exclusive chat with Christian Falk about Jude Bellingham that will be out on the app right now. Andy's launched it whilst producing this. How multi-talented, how multifunctional. It's one of the reasons for the three children. Thank you very much to Steve, to Sean, and to Neil. It's been your tour live this week. I hope you've enjoyed it. We'll see you later on. Sports Social Podcast Network.